Welcome back to Here to Speak, the podcast where we talk about communication, connection, and the therapies that help people find their voice. I'm Caitlin, a speech-language pathologist, and I'm joined today by a very special guest, Haley, a board-certified music therapist. Haley, I'm so excited to have you here today because speech and music therapy actually overlap a lot more than people realize. So today we're talking about how our fields work together to support the same goal of, you know, helping people communicate and connect. I'm also a big fan of yours. For those of you joining us today, Haley and I used to share adjoining offices. So I have gotten to witness firsthand how talented she is and what an impact she has on the lives of her patients. So happy to be able to do this with you today.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
For sure. So tell us a little bit about yourself. How did you become a music therapist? What brought you to this field?
Yeah, so I have done music my entire life, and I was in musical theater as a child, was in choir, did regular theater, and really just always had music in some form as a hobby of mine. When it came time to decide, okay, I have to pick a future career, I knew I didn't want to teach. I had so much respect for my teachers, but it was not something that I had the passion or patience for in the traditional model of music theory. And if I'm being completely honest, I think back to those teaching recorders in elementary school, and I was like, oh, I can't survive that phase. I knew I didn't want to be a performer either. It's actually surprising to many people, because I sing for a living, that I actually don't like getting on stage and singing in front of audiences and crowds. I get a little bit of like anxiety and nervousness. So that kind of left me with, can I even do music as a career? And so I started researching. I originally thought about becoming like a counselor or a psychiatrist, something with a helping profession. But as I continued to research, I realized it was a lot of school, which is funny now because I still have done a lot of school to get to where I am. But I happened to actually be home one day. My parents had the news on, and I'm from the area. So it was Texas Children's Hospital here in Houston. They were doing a segment on music therapy and how they were addressing it in the hospitals and supporting children with that. I hadn't heard of it before that. And so as I was watching the segment, I was like, what is music therapy? This sounds different. Mm-hmm. So I decided to start researching it, and I found more about the field. I started looking for schools in Texas that offered the program. Found Texas Women's University up in Denton, offered it. So I went up there, did a tour, asked the professors a bunch of questions, and just tried to figure out what it was about. And I found out the very basic definition is it's using music to help people. And I was like, okay, this is kind of taking my two loves and putting them together. And I remember doing my first semester there with, what do they call it back then? It's essentially a practicum, and where I get to work one-on-one with individuals in the clinical setting, and fell in love and never looked back after that.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So tell us about music therapy. How would you explain it to somebody who's never heard of it?
Yeah, the simplest definition I use is we use music to help individuals make progress in different domain and goal areas. Because really, like you said, there's a lot of crossover between speech and music therapy, but we also a lot of times collaborate with other therapists to help support goals with individuals, most of the time with disabilities, to reach either goals their parents have come up with them or therapy centers, schools, and we find that music is a motivator that maybe some of the traditional therapies don't offer the same motivation to put in the quote unquote work, right? Mm-hmm. As music can seem more fun. And as you know, working with children, the same with play-based, that if we can sometimes disguise things in a way, kiddos don't always realize they're putting in the work, and adults too don't always realize they're putting in the work
100%.
That is helping them get towards a goal that we've been working on. So we find after we do an evaluation with some of the individuals we work with, music is just so their second language, as we call it, mm-hmm. that all of these things we've been working on to front load them with, it just starts clicking in their brain. The more complex definition I like to give is the neuroscience part of it, that music actually uses both hemispheres of the brain at the same time, crosses midline. So when we see these individuals that may go to traditional speech therapy and they're trying so hard with the motor planning to be able to talk and to actually create the mechanics behind speaking, it takes a lot of brain power. And as we know, it takes a lot of repetition in order to learn any skill. So whenever we pair music, sometimes we get more of those neural pathways lighting up, fighting for that skill we've been working towards, and it gives them essentially more brain power to put behind it, and it makes it more accessible for them to learn that skill. I will say not every brain and individual is motivated more by music, but we have a lot of friends we do, especially kiddos that are on the autism spectrum. It really helps them with communication and like unlocking that piece and almost like accessing a door they couldn't before. So yeah, that's the more complex definition that I like using with other therapists, is that music just gives more access for them in order to achieve the skills they probably have already been working on with other therapists. And we just are part of the team to help them get there.
That's awesome. Yeah. I love that.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. So how would you say it's different from like a music class or music lessons?
Yeah, that's a very good question. I've actually done a couple presentations because I've had music teachers come to me that they may have a kiddo in their class that is has some type of disabilities and in special education. And they're like, I am having a hard time getting them to attend or want to learn the content in the class. And there is a huge difference with traditional like music and music education. You're teaching music theory, essentially, on how to either play an instrument, read scales, notes, chords, time signatures, things like that, and the fundamentals. Music therapy, we create music specifically for the client for the goal that they want. So say we have a goal of increasing requesting. That's a very common goal that we see, that we're trying to get them to start to communicate either through a device or verbally or however their preferred communication is, to request wants and needs. We as therapists go in and not only get to know the individual, it could be a child or an adult, and get preferred music that they like and what types of music motivate them, so that whatever we're creating is going to be engaging for them. But then we have different steps that we create depending on their level of where they currently are versus where we're trying to get them to. And we scaffold that based on each client. And not to completely jump ahead, but at our clinic, we are client-centered, client-based, and believe in meeting each client where they are. And so for us, it could look different, even if it's the same goal, that there may be some individuals that need more steps or less steps. And as a therapist, we are going to create a model that's specific for them, versus if you're in a music class, most of the time they have a lesson through the year, right? That it's already pre-planned and they know every year we start with this and we build onto this. And while in that case, it's a little same of we're as therapists, right? We're always building on to skills. We are also having a therapeutic relationship that everything is one-on-one and specifically for that individual.
Nice.
Yeah.
So what kind of goals do you target in sessions?
Yeah, it can vary. So I will say we have our one-on-one clinic here. We also offer groups, and then we do go to some therapy centers and public and private schools. So first and foremost, the setting is going to change maybe what we're approaching and how we're approaching it. Obviously, in a private setting, we have more flexibility of what we can support. And if we are working with a kiddo, we're obviously collaborating more with the parent on what they're wanting to see in their everyday life and quality of life and at home. That can be something like communication, like I just said, with requesting, or even just starting the basic fundamentals of being able to navigate through a device that may not even necessarily look like us teaching them the words on the device, but the steps of creating a song, that first you do this, second you do this. So because that can help in their head learn the order of what needs to happen. Kind of like when you teach someone ABCs, do you ever just say ABCs? No, we sing ABCs.
Right.
And it's the same concept of we may be teaching steps and fundamentals through songs that click in their brain versus if we're in a therapy center or a school district, it may be a very specific therapy goal that was already created, and we are piggybacking on that to create songs that are already happening, maybe with the speech therapist, physical therapist, OT. So there's a wide variety. I will also say, like, we go into assisted living facilities where we do memory care, and some of that may be just more of a quality of life that we go in, and the group of individuals, I've seen it time and time again, that we know stimulation in these types of facilities is low. And unfortunately, too, there are times that they're not always receiving a lot of visitation from family. And so our goal may be just to give them quality of life, to have a good time, and then also to increase socialization with the other people that they're living with, because we know that a lot of times they can be kept in their room, and they, if they're not encouraged to get out, that socialization isn't naturally happening. So yeah, it's a wide variety. I mean, music therapists also go to hospitals. We don't personally, but it may be helping with pain management if, you know, you have individuals in a hospital having to get a procedure done, or if they're in the NICU, helping with bonding with their parents, if they're still, you know, having to go through lots of different procedures, and maybe the physical touch and skin to skin isn't as high as the traditional, you know, birth that we see. So really wide variety, and with being client-based, there almost isn't like a limit to what we can do. It really is just based on each person that comes into our door and what they are wanting to use music to help them with.
That's awesome.
Yeah, thank you.
For sure. So what do people often misunderstand about music therapy?
Yeah. A lot of times we have an inside running joke in the music therapy field of the stereotypical song is Kumbaya. Like, we just come in and we sing Kumbaya. And a lot of times they don't think there's any additional training. That's volunteer type of work. I can't tell you how many times in my career I've had hospitals reach out to me that have just asked if I would go in and play for patients for free. And while I understand that music for everybody has that very personal relationship, music therapy is different. And that's what makes it hard. Do you think that you can ask anybody in the world, do you not like music? And they would say, oh no, I don't like music.
Like, I've actually met a couple of those and immediately distrust them. Cause no. I'm like, you're not into music. You just don't like music.
Right.
I'm like, you're one of like, in a lifetime, I've met maybe two.
Yeah.
They're just like, yeah, no, I'm not into music. I don't really like music. I'm like, we can't be friends. I'm sorry.
No, you don't trust those people.
Because I've met so few of them. And like, I'm also really into music. And so it just is so alien to me that I'm just like, it just kind of really threw me.
Yeah. I don't know if I've ever met anybody that says, I just don't like music at all.
No, I've met definitely two. And it really, really threw me.
Wow.
I was like, not sure how to react. It was kind of a conversation stopper. Because I was just like,
you're like, so none. Wow.
Yes.
Okay. So I personally haven't been through that, but if I had been, I would be the same way. I'd be like, I can't trust you. There's something else going on here. But we can say it's obviously rare that people say, I don't like any type of music, which then makes it hard of, well, if everyone likes music, then wouldn't everyone benefit from music therapy? Mm-hmm. And going back to what I originally said, we have to have a goal that we're working on. A lot of times people don't fully understand we're a therapy just like all of the other therapy models out there. And that being said, as speech therapists, it wouldn't be ethical for you to still see someone if they had mastered everything that they were coming in to see you for and working on.
But just really like talking and wanting to keep coming.
Exactly. If you were like, oh, but we're besties at this point, you know, that's not how that works. Mm-hmm. From an ethical standpoint, music therapists are the same way. We have to have goals to work on. We have to have things in a therapeutic model that we're seeing them for. It can't be just for the pure enjoyment of music. I will say we offer adaptive lessons in our practice, which is a little different. But if we are doing a true therapeutic model, which is where the misunderstanding comes from in our field, it can't be music enjoyment. It can't be that you're just looking at us as only musicians and not therapists as well.
Right.
And we have a huge misunderstanding in being held at the same standard as other therapists in the field. As wild as it sounds, being paid for our job.
Because I was going to say, that's not just a public perspective. That's also like an insurance perspective in most states, right?
Oh, yeah. And Texas is one of them. We do not have licensure in the state of Texas, so we can't bill through insurance.
That's wild.
I know. I could be wrong on these numbers, but the last time I checked, I want to say it was like 14 or 17 states in the U.S. have licensure. So definitely majority don't.
Wow.
And it's a self-pay model, which... obviously affects our field as well,
right?
Because people are paying completely out of pocket for these things and not being reimbursed. But being in presentations and trying to share what we do as therapists, it can be hard sometimes whenever we're not even at the table as all of the other therapy models. So I would say advocacy and just teaching is one of the biggest things for us that we continually work on. And then understanding then also that we work to be paid because we aren't just going into a hospital and playing music for enjoyment where
you're not entertainers.
Not entertainers. No, but even though several of us enjoy gigging and things, that's not our job.
Yeah.
And it's hard because if someone walks in and doesn't know all of these things we've done beforehand, they may just think that we're only playing a preferred song for this individual. But you know, one of the biggest examples I can think of is if I go into a memory care facility and I have someone that when I walked in, they didn't even know their own name. But then, you know, after several songs, we're playing preferred music from a generational time that was important to them. And then they're singing all of the words and they're filling in the blanks. That's a huge step where you may walk in and think, oh, they're just playing Red River Valley with this person and they're singing with them versus you haven't seen all of the work we've done beforehand that, you know, they couldn't even remember their name, let alone the first three songs in the lyrics. And now things are starting to light up inside their head and things are clicking and now they're remembering. And I have so many memories and examples of when I've gone into those memory care facilities and all the individuals are sitting around the table at the beginning and like seriously exhausted, not interacting with one another. Several of them don't even want to be there. They just want to go back to their room versus an hour later, I leave. They're all talking. They're all interacting. And just to see the impact that, you know, music has and how important it is. So yeah, as music therapists, there are several barriers we have to get through in order to be respected, like you said, on a state level, a professional level, and sometimes even within the community ourselves of what we're doing as music therapists, because a lot of people think we're a newer profession, but we're not. And that being said, with the lack of accessibility, our research and our availability to do things is behind other fields. So it also often seemingly comes off like we are newer whenever really a lot of it's been there for quite a while.
Yeah. That's, I mean, it's great that you guys are continuing to educate and present and, you know, fight the good fight for that recognition and for that access of care for your patients.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Yeah.
It's something you have to be comfortable with when becoming a music therapist. I feel like to get into the field, you have to have a little bit of thick skin and be okay being outspoken in a sense too, because I definitely am always, every day I go and advocate for our field in some capacity. And so, and where we are depending on the setting may change the advocacy work that we're doing. But, you know, I can tell you as a private practice, the biggest thing with marketing is like, how do you market a service that people don't know what you are? And so it's like you have to teach first, market second. And so it has its own hurdles for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. So how do you see music supporting language development?
Yeah, absolutely. So one of my favorite cases that I often tell people about is Gabby Giffords. I don't remember how long ago it was, definitely over a decade, but she was the senator that was shot and she actually lost her ability to speak. And a lot of people aren't aware that she actually sang before she ever spoke because she had a music therapist working with her. And so going back to what I had talked about at the beginning with accessing more of those neural pathways in your brain, it allows individuals more quote unquote brain power to use for language. And it can go down to something as we discussed with like the actual like motors of things, right? And right. if they're trying to learn how to move their mouth, they're getting more brain power to help with that motor functioning. But it also can go to the memory aspect, like we said, that if we're repeating a skill over and over, sometimes having it paired to song can allow it to be accessed a little easier and they don't have to fight through so many steps in their head to access that information. There's also the fun aspect of it. Like I said, at the beginning, if we're working like with play therapy and play-based therapy, kids are often more likely to want to sing something with you because it's more fun than maybe a more traditional therapy model. So language, we see a lot. We probably honestly both in like the public and private sector attach most to language type of goals and communication type of goals, whether it's through social skills or actual communication. I see a lot of like requesting, a lot of learning letters, numbers, social skills of interacting with other kids. And music can help with that social skill side of things for a couple reasons. One, like I'd mentioned about giving steps, I have a song that I use with kiddos of having a conversation. And so it actually goes over the steps of like, if someone asks you a question, it's polite to answer their question and then ask a question back. Because you, as you know, a lot of our friends, they just aren't even familiar with that routine.
I would love to hear that song. Because that to me is, you know, I am chatty to a fault, like, and was like the kid where it's like, don't talk to strangers. And so like, that was never anything anyone had to teach me. And yeah. So in my practice, like learning those skills to help others learn those skills has been something that I've continually looked for, like different, you know, resources and professional development on, because I'm like, you know, how do we teach others to want to have a conversation? And a lot of times, you know, it just depends on individual motivation or the topic or, you know, the yes. context, but sometimes it seems so contrived.
Yes.
And so kids are not interested. Like, I'll have a little guy be like, I already know how to do that. Can we play the game now?
Yeah. And I know that.
So roll it back.
Yeah, I know that you see it too. Like we do, we have the opposite sides of the spectrum, right? Where mm-hmm. we have kiddos that they don't want to converse at all versus mm-hmm. like you were saying, the other side where they will not pause to let other people take a turn.
Right.
And I like using this model because going back to two of like we meet each kiddo where they are, this song can be applied to both of like, I'm so glad you gave such a full answer, but now we're working on pausing and letting the next person go versus maybe the other friend of we're working on learning how to just ask a question and not have anxiety about it. And it's in a safe setting where that's where you may see the difference too, between one-on-one therapy of if we're really working on those very basic fundamental skills versus now we've front-loaded them and are now in more of a group setting of we're taking turns, which we have taking turn songs and things like that.
Yeah.
And you may find that it's more fun for them to learn in those settings versus maybe a stereotypical like social skills group where we have instruments or something very motivational that they're waiting for and they have to have that motivation to be like, okay, I know I'm getting this next. I have to wait. It's not my turn to play the piano right now or the xylophone right now. But then when it is my turn, I know if I ask, like, they're going to pass it and, you know, working on the appropriateness of not just throwing something at someone. They're also politely passing it with gentle hands and some of those concepts of working together with others. And so, yeah, I'm trying to remember what your specific question was.
You're totally fine. Just some of the ways it overlaps and that you see music therapy help language development, which you know, I'm glad that you brought up Gail Gifford? No.
Gabby Gifford.
Thank yeah. you. I knew exactly who you meant when you said it.
Yeah.
But like, I've seen that, you know, with some of my, traumatic brain injury patients as well. And mm-hmm. there's actually an approach, for working on expressive language, like within the speech language pathology side called melodic intonation therapy.
Yes.
Yeah. And so, and I've seen that, you know, with some individuals with like global aphasia where they're not able to express themselves, but with music can get words out. Or one individual that I work with who, you know, is recovering from a severe traumatic brain injury, that was the first thing that helped him facilitate speech was pairing it with music and kind of filling in a blank. Yes. I had to learn a new genre of music because he is in a totally different class of like music appreciation than me. And I'm like, I had to like Google hip hop song lyrics that had like functional phrases so we could, you know, fit everyday objects in there. But that was a really fun challenge. But
Yeah. And that's something with our job we have to do as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously meeting each individual where they are, we have a wide range of music. And I don't want to assume that every elementary school girl that comes in is going to like Taylor Swift. They may come in and they may like heavy metal or classical music. Yeah. And so as music therapists, we have to have a wide range of understanding and training in music. Mm-hmm. Something too that's different about our field that a lot of people don't know is it's a technically a dual degree. And so we have to not only have a music degree, but then a psychology degree as well.
I had no idea.
Yes. And so we have all of that, you know, developmental psychology to learn how to work with individuals through the whole course of their life, but then also the side of actually knowing mental health, because there are music therapists that work in those settings. And then the other side of having a music major, we have to take quite a few proficiency exams through our whole coursework in order to become music therapists. And they're very, very strict about it. If you don't pass certain like exams and markers, you can't continue the degree anymore. They make you change degree paths.
Wow.
Even some of the tests you can only take a couple of times. Mm-hmm. And if you can't pass it by the second time, they're like, you're not proficient enough as a musician. You have to pick another career path.
Wow.
They expect your musicianship skills to be strong, because really what it comes down to is therapists, we are not there for ourselves. We're there for the client. And so if we are not strong musicians first, we are not going to be out of our head and be truly present.
So you can't fumble the chords of Kumbaya.
You can totally fumble the chords of Kumbaya, but you also have to make sure that you can keep going and that it isn't totally just about you in the moment and that you can meet the client where they are. Mm-hmm. And so if you are not proficient enough in playing at least two, I would say, instruments, piano and guitar, and being able to carry a tune, it's going to be very, very difficult.
I would imagine.
Yeah.
So those are like prerequisite instruments. You have to know piano and you have to know guitar.
Yes. And so in my degree path, I had to know piano, guitar, percussion and singing. And then this really weird instrument that nobody ever uses called an auto harp. I'm not sure if you know what that is.
I've heard of it. I can't picture it.
It looks like the inside of a piano.
Okay.
And it looks like a grand piano. It has that same like shape that it does, where the strings are long on the, you know, deeper side and shorter on the higher side. And then you hold it like this, like you would kind of like
a traditional harp?
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's smaller. It goes in your lap. And at the bottom, you have buttons that you press, and that's the chords. And so you strum with this hand and you press, you literally hold it like this and you strum with one hand and press the buttons with the other and accompany yourself as you're singing.
How many sessions a month do you bust out your auto harp?
Zero. I got that as my undergrad present from my grandparents. It was a very nice, and I have to add, very expensive instrument. And I think I've only used it once. I feel so bad. The thing is so hard to tune.
Yeah.
It's literally like, I mean, like a piano, however many strings that is.
Right.
And it has like a little wrench that you have to turn each little string to.
Wow.
And, oh, yeah. It's a little heavy, but it is accessible. You have to sit to play it. I will say that the typically like the elderly population loves it. It's
nostalgic?
Maybe. There for some reason.
Novel for sure.
Yes, for sure. But I find when I'm going out and about, guitar is most accessible. But in clinic, we use a lot of piano. So, and we find that most of our adapted lessons with kiddos here in clinic are for piano requests. So, yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, that's awesome. Thank you.
Can you share a moment that really stuck out to you in your practice, where you really saw music unlock communication?
Yeah, that is hard for me because there are several. I can think of kiddos that I've had that we were working on verbal communication versus kiddos that I've worked on them with their device for communication.
I want to do a whole podcast on that because devices are like a particular passion of mine.
Yeah.
And I had no idea that like music therapists were working on like operational skills or like cause effect or communication skills like for AAC devices within music therapy.
Yeah.
Like you said that, and I don't know if you could see it from across the table, but my mind exploded just a little.
Oh, I'm so glad to hear that.
Yeah. So let's put that on the books. I want a whole podcast just on that.
Great.
That's great. We have a lot of device users, and I feel like that's an area that, you know, as a parent, it's harder to implement than like, hey, incorporate more nursery rhymes, or hey, model more language. When you're modeling language on a device you don't know, it adds a whole step of, okay, now you have to learn a new technology mm-hmm. and be proficient with it to help model so that your kid can be proficient with it. And it's sort of, you know, like, of course, everyone has time to do that between like daycare drop-offs and homework and bath time and trying to like get a meal on the table that everyone will eat the same food. It's, you know,
yes.
Sure, when are we going to put that in?
Yes.
So that's brilliant. I would have never thought of that. So.
Yeah. And, I will say that even, and you, I know you know this, but just to share with those that are listening, that even when we have communicators that aren't using verbal communication to communicate,
mm-hmm.
that it is still important, like you said, for us to model, for us to do all of the steps we would, like we were teaching someone, like they were going to speak verbally back to us.
Right.
And so music is great for that, because if we are using a device, we can sing things, whether it's like you said, the actual steps of the motor planning to get there,
mm-hmm.
or if it is they're trying to just learn what the word is and what it means, and we're going over definitions of things, or they're plugging it into a preferred song that they're filling in the blank because they're mm-hmm. learning to navigate.
Yeah.
I will also say that I have a few clients that I see that don't use a device and actually use sign language. And mm-hmm. so sign is really great to pair with song as well, and kind of the same concept. Even though the kiddos are communicating through sign, I'm still singing, I'm still modeling through moving my lips and talking so they can get all of the steps that they need in order to learn the language as we go. Because we know as therapists how important it is for children to hear their parents do things. That's mm-hmm. what I was trying to get to with
yes.
all of this.
No, you're good.
Something I learned very early on and that I implement while I'm working with children on communication is, and I continually encourage with the parents I work with, is there is nobody who they're going to respond better to than their parents.
Mm-hmm.
And so you may think you can't sing or that you may not know the correct steps, even if it's traditional speech therapy, to work through things or the correct way to introduce a word or something like that. But really, whenever the children are having that front-loaded support of learning language initially, they don't care about all of that. They just mm-hmm. want to hear their parents speak because that's who they have the connection to.
Yeah.
And so it's the same way with learning language through song, that it doesn't matter if you can carry a tune or not. They just want to hear you.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of times when I'm working on those language aspects with parents, I give the parents a ton of support as well, especially like in my toddler groups that I see.
Mm-hmm.
So they can take things home with them. For me, it's not just a class or a group where I'm working with the kiddo individually. I'm also teaching the parents how to take tools home with them. So that way, no matter how the child is communicating, they're able to model and continue that. But to share like two short stories I can think of is I do have a little girl that I have been working on sign language with through song. And it has amazed me in the last year how we have gone from just really the very basic fundamentals of being able to sit and attend and be present and to make the eye contact to see me long enough to show her the signs that go mm-hmm. with her preferred songs, and how much in a year she has grown. She also is a TBI patient as mm-hmm. well, along with other intellectual disabilities. And so we not only have the side of the intellectual disability of learning how to communicate, but then we also have the gross motor functioning as well mm-hmm. of from the stroke, that we have to make sure that she can build the strength to sign. As we know, most signs have more than one hand usage.
Right.
So that has been really amazing to see music be a motivator for her to get stronger with the gross motor functioning, to be able to sit and attend and keep attention higher, and then to actually introduce the sign communication since that's been preferred.
Mm.
The other story is I had a teenage boy I saw a few years ago who his parents had worked really, really hard for several years in different therapies and had just had a very difficult time getting him to respond to anything. But they believed music was a motivator for him. However, he was in ABA full-time and needed quite a high level of support for some aggressive behaviors and things like that. And so it could be really difficult to teach skills whenever you're just trying to have a child get to a calm state.
Mm.
And music was that for him. And we actually went from when he came in that he couldn't even walk through the door. Like the first session I ever had with him essentially was 5 seconds and he could not even get through the front door.
Mm-hmm.
To then after, I think it was a year or a year and a half of working with me, he was in my room and we had scaffolded enough of getting him to start using his device, which he used not at all before seeing me,
mm-hmm.
to making multiple word phrases and requests. And
that's amazing.
Yeah. And being able to communicate and type what he wanted with his parents. And yeah. So it was really.
See, and like I see kids go into your office with mm-hmm. devices, and I know that that's their primary mode of communication. But I guess I've just never thought. And like I use expectant delay and like nursery rhymes to fill in like cow or chicken and like old McDonald, but it just never occurred to me that like you had whole sessions and lessons around using music to support device users. So that's so fun.
Yeah, it's really amazing. And getting to see that client in particular, it was so cool to see how music therapy supported multiple areas, right?
Right.
Just getting him through the door and then getting him.
That regulation.
Yes, mm-hmm. receptive to the device because it's like, okay, now this is an unfamiliar thing mm-hmm. and we've never done it in the steps.
Or it's been something non-preferred that's been pushed and, you know, demands versus invitations.
Absolutely.
Or opportunities.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And having him gain autonomy and a voice for himself mm-hmm. was really the win for me for that. Is just
that's great.
I remember telling parents, I just want him to be able to have autonomy because, mm-hmm. like I said, he was a teenager at this point.
Yeah.
So we're getting to the point of thinking of the rest of our life. And I'm going, he has to be able to say yes and no when he means yes and no.
Yeah.
And so at the very least, we have to be able to get him to that state. So
yeah, that's great.
It's really rewarding to see for these friends that come in that music is their second language, how we can support a wide variety of domains and goals for them through using something they love so much.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
I could talk to you about this all day. Like, we need to schedule at least 3 more of these.
That sounds good. We could do like a part 1, 2,
there you go.
3,
there you go.
Our series, whatever. Right? Sounds great.
Yes. And then in one of them, I want to know when if you're in a memory care facility, what your songs would be that bring you back. And then, you know, I'll share mine and we'll horrify the future music therapists of America.
That sounds great. I'm so down for that.
Awesome. Haley, how can people find you if they are interested in music therapy?
Yeah, so we have a website. It's Helpful Harmonies MT, like musictherapy.com. And on there, we have all of our information for our practice, facilities we go to, groups. And then we, of course, have contact forms, interest forms that people can reach out to us directly if they want to receive services through our practice.
Awesome. If you've enjoyed this episode, please share it and follow Here to Speak on YouTube, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you're curious whether speech or music therapy might help someone in your life, reach out. We'd love to help guide you.